It's the ERP Confab. I'm David Essex, industry editor at Search SAP. With my colleagues, news editor Jim O'Donnell and Brian McKenna, business applications editor at Computer Weekly. After going virtual the first 2 years of the pandemic, the SAP Sapphire Conference returned to Orlando, Florida this month, the first leg of a 9-city global tour. There was no major news, and attendance, while a quarter of the size of past years, was respectable. And SAP continued to push its themes of sustainability, business transformation, and resilient supply chains. We'll give our take on this new style Sapphire and where it leaves SAP competitively. The three of us have just recently come back over the past week from two of the first in-person Sapphire conferences, first time in 3 years since COVID made everything virtual. Jim and I were in Orlando last week, and Brian, you were in The Hague. I guess maybe we should go around, since there's such a change in the format of the conference, maybe talk a little bit about how the conference felt since we were back in person. And also, this is the 9-city tour by SAP, which is also a new thing. So therefore, a lot of these regional ones would be a bit smaller, maybe collectively about the same.
It was nice to be back, you know, live and in person. I thought that was much improved format over virtual for a number of reasons we can get into, but I thought it was a little bit odd too. On the one hand, it felt very familiar. It was the same location that it's been in the last few years before it went virtual. So that seemed familiar. There was sort of just the usual stuff like the signage and some of the, you know, the show floor seemed very familiar, but it did seem smaller. I mean, it was definitely noticeably smaller.
The keynote room was roughly exactly the size of what the Herbert the conference was, about a quarter or a fifth of the normal size. Yeah.
Yep. That would have been normally, you know, a space where they might have had smaller sort of, sessions or presentations or roundtables, that type of thing. That definitely felt a little bit odd. And, I just thought overall there were some curious things that maybe we could get into that I thought were fairly noticeable. But, you know, overall, you know, there was a ton of announcements they made on the first day. None of them were any sort of what I would consider major product announcements. You know, I had a briefing with Sven Denikin, the head of product for SAP, SAP Cloud, S/4HANA Cloud. But, you know, he said they don't really have to do that anymore because with the cloud, they can just roll out these announcements, throughout the year. So there's really no more need to, you know, kind of wait till Sapphire to make big announcements.
I felt like we were noticing that with some of our, especially virtual conferences, maybe for obvious reasons over the last couple mm-hmm. of years, but then something about it, really seeing it in person and then having the SAP itself and the media relations people and release all of these, this big batch of small to medium sized announcements all in one day, really kind of drove it home how we're in a different world now with so many releases coming through SaaS and being on more of a quarterly or semi-annual cycle.
Yeah. And I don't know if people really, you know, got any value out of that, having so many things thrown out. I mean, each person, you know, probably if you were looking for that particular sort of, update of your product that you're interested in, maybe you'll find it. But overall, I don't know if, you know, people were able to find any information that was particularly useful. And it was interesting. I talked to a man named, I don't know, Brian, you know, Ben McGrail, right? He's London based. He used to work for SNP, who are kind of a data migration specialist, but he has his own company now called X Materia. He's the managing director of that. And he said there was an announcement about something called the Business Transformation Center, which didn't make any of the, there was not a press release for it. It wasn't mentioned at all. He just happened to see that there was a session about it, and that was his field. He's particularly, you know, he does data migration. He said that this is a tool, a service that SAP is apparently going to be offering for free that does selective data migration. And he said that customers will be really interested in this because there are tools like this already, but they tend to be, you know, you have to buy them and they're not always certified by SAP. So he said something that gets like that sort of certification from SAP itself and it's free. he thought there'd be really, there'd be quite a bit of interest in this tool, but he really had to go looking for himself, and he's in that field. So I was just kind of curious, things like that.
Yeah, maybe in a way they didn't have their act together. I think it might be good to drill down a little bit into some of the products a little bit later. But Brian, three of us are usually together in Orlando every year at Sapphire. And so this year you've been to many European conferences and I think some SAP events over there. So what did you think of the turnout in The Hague these last couple of days?
So it was a very, very good turnout. At least 1,700 people were there. SAP PR told me that's the best figure that he could lay his hands on yesterday. Felt very busy and buzzy, and people were glad to kind of see each other in person. Mm-hmm. And that's been a common thing of the in-person conferences that I've been to recently. I went to Gartner one in London the week before. Yeah, I was in The Hague, adjacent to the conference center, is adjacent to or across the road from Europol, which is quite interesting because The Hague has all these kind of institutions like that. Are there a very pristine city is the adjective I would use for it. Never been to The Hague before. No product announcements, of course, but, the keynote was maybe more about possibly the kind of bigger picture thing. They were hammering the themes of sustainability. So on stage, they had Rohit Nagarajan and also Brian Duffy. They were on stage together. Thomas Saurasek, who I think is on the executive board, mm-hmm. he was there talking. So they had a bunch of people. So I ran into one of my CIO contacts on the floor, and he said he was quite pleased to see some of the big boys on stage. That was his phrasing for that. But we didn't have, say, Christian Klein and so on. But I'd say, yeah, it was definitely busy and buzzy, and they were mainly driving home those big picture themes. But that was really interesting what you were saying there, Jim, about transformation. Another person who was there was Scott Russell. He's on the board and very much talking about RISE. And so we had a number of media briefings, kind of group media sessions. He was in on one of those, so he spoke to us. As did Irfan Khan, who kind of looks after the data side of things globally. I just get his title properly so that I've got that correctly. President for HANA Databases and Analytics. And of course, Scott, he leads customer success for SAP globally. So it was interesting to hear what those two fellas had to say and kind of putting together what they said. But Scott was... mainly, he was saying that in his view, right, the whole transformation as a service piece in RISE is unique in the market.
Let's touch on that a little more, because I think, Jim, you talked to someone who said that there was some vagueness to that. And then I think it was someone you talked to, maybe two people who were saying that, yes, that's what it is, and that's what SAP says it is, but that it really has to be driven by the company or the customer who's doing it.
Right. Exactly. First of all, let me say, Orlando is will never be confused with The Hague. So you might have a better venue for it.
So you wouldn't describe it as pristine then?
No, not at all. Not if you like strip malls and hotels. It's right up your alley. Although the Universal was pretty pristine, I have to admit that.
Yes.
With Diagon Alley. The overall message of business transformation as a service did not seem to resonate with people I talked to at all, really. I don't think people really know what it means. One person, as Dave, you said, one person said to me that you can't really offer transformation. But business transformation is a process that is a long-term, investment, and it really sort of involves, a number of different parties, and you just can't offer that as like sort of a service like you would a SaaS software.
How do you know that you've done it?
Exactly right. It's for the long term, and each business is, and there's a certain standardization that you get with as a service. I think that kind of goes with the words, with the phrase itself, that you're, when you go for, software as a service, it's standardized and you don't customize it. You get what you get. And, you know, as you were saying, Dave, the person I talked to said that, you know, each business is different enough that you can't really serve, you can't standardize something that's like a transformation like that. So
Scott did say something though, guys, which might help us to kind of think about this, as the analysts say. He said that what he defined as being unique is, he said that none of their competition give advice or support about getting to the cloud, you know, the journey. Mm-hmm. They talk about, in his view, I mean, this is his view, they talk about, like, you know, what it'll be like when you're there, mm-hmm. but they don't talk about how, you know, how to get there. And he was saying that's unique to SAP. And he also flagged Signavio as important in that.
Came up quite a bit in Orlando too. And I think, Jim, you talked to some folks about that. It does seem like it has a prominent role in the process, the workflow, and the also analyzing the process, which is a big part of digital transformation and also any kind of cloud migration.
I agree with that. I don't disagree that, you know, that there is a lot of value and they might be on the right track with a lot of stuff. I just think that calling it business transformation as a service doesn't seem like the right phraseology. I think it just either confuses people or they simply don't understand what they're saying.
It's promising it's promising the moon, isn't it?
It is, in a way. And they're not, well, but one thing I did, you know, I noticed, I don't know, Dave, you were on, you know, on the floor in Orlando. Mm-hmm. And I thought, other than the sort of the, you know, Christian Klein's opening day keynote, when he did, you know, he said one of the most, you know, prominent challenges, he mentioned three things. One was the speed of change in business. Then the second was supply chain disruption. And the third was sustainability issues. So, and he did say that RISE with SAP is kind of the answer to the first problem, which is, you know, the speed of business transformation that you have to, you know, that this program is designed to help with that from the SAP perspective. But, you know, other than that, I didn't really see a lot about RISE with SAP. I don't know if you noticed it too, but it almost wasn't until the end of the conference when I realized, and I talked to an SAP employee that was kind of manning one of the booths they had, and they were offering like cloud services. And it just happened to have RISE with SAP on the signage, but it wasn't really anything to do with RISE with SAP in any sort of, you know, formal sense. He said people kept coming up to him and looking for information on RISE with SAP just because the name was there, and it was one of the few places that you saw it other than the opening day keynotes.
It's interesting that you should say that, Jim, because I didn't notice it, and maybe I should have, but I wasn't noticing what I couldn't see. And you're mm-hmm. right, though. And it's like, it's partly because it's a service and it's something they talk about. You know, it's not a thing.
And the Christian Klein keynote, who were the, I'm just trying to, is Unilever was one of the customers?
Yeah. Unilever spoke, And they talked mainly about their sustainability efforts.
And Lenovo, but they were more
They were on the supply chain side, yes. And
were there any RISE with SAP customers?
I don't recall it.
Yeah.
I do not. Yep. And I'm really thinking about it. That does surprise me a little that they didn't have any customers saying, you know, here was our RISE experience. It was great. You know, this is what we did.
So hang on here, gentlemen. I might be able to come to the rescue of SAP slightly here, because then again, I might be wrong. But so the customer they had on stage with Thomas Aurisig, was Peter Vekasa, who is the chief digital officer for Schneider Electric. Mm-hmm. And he said that they have like 70 ERP platforms in their company, and they believe that RISE in the public cloud is the answer to that. Unless I misinterpreted that during the keynotes, I think they might be a RISE customer. I wouldn't totally swear to that. I have written, as you have, Jim, about some RISE with SAP customers, so they do exist. I mean, I've done Unipart, Twinings, various others. Inchcape is one. Maybe it's surprising that they weren't more prominent on stage.
I know we talked about this recently. Something about RISE, including some things I've been told about how private cloud and some of the non-SaaS, multi-tenant SaaS aspects of S/4HANA and the rest of the SAP platform are a part of that, a big part of it. Although I guess I was saying this mostly in connection with industry clouds, where it really became apparent that they were taking the same relationships that they had with Deloitte and EY and all the other major system integrators and doing a lot of the same thing they were doing to kind of configure systems for specific industries and companies within industries. So RISE, it has a bit of that feel, again, of necessity being the mother of invention. Like they needed to do this, I think, especially because S4HANA actual deployments, especially to the cloud version, were not really going that well. Is it
right? Correct.
Doesn't it seem like that was the case, despite what we were told after over time, yeah, over a number of years, they really weren't going that well, and they were getting a lot of on-premises S4HANA.
Think about the like the way Christian Klein was presenting RISE in the first place. It was all about, you know, we don't just want to be selling technology. That's not what we want to be doing. We want to be, and that was a big theme again for Scott Russell in the session that he had with the press in The Hague. Very much stressing outcomes. It's all about customer business outcomes. Now, he's the customer success guy, so I mean, he is going to say something like that. But yeah, it's that shift to, you know, delivering business outcomes and not just flogging a whole bunch of tech.
Yeah, I absolutely think that they're trying to get that message across, that it's not that tech is you know, a part
whether
of
that's it. Whether that's landing.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah, well, I mean, you've reported on and I have too about you know surveys coming out from, you know, from the UK and Ireland and the German SAP user groups, yeah, and ASOC in Americas that you know, people still, now some of these might be a little bit out of date now because they're, you know, I think some of them date back at least a year and a half, that a lot of customers still aren't quite sure. They don't understand what RISE is, and maybe, you know, a lot of them hadn't heard of it. And, you know, just in my sort of kind of anecdotal survey of around the show floor at SAP, yeah, I still think people don't, or Sapphire, I still think that there's not a lot of, you know, knowledge amongst the sort of the general population of SAP customers about what it is and what it does.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose what they would say, certainly what Scott would say, is we're 15 months in. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not that long. Right. But yeah, that's what he would say. Doesn't mean that that's, we have to think that's correct or not.
It's still a big commitment from SAP. So I wish I could have a crystal ball and be doing this meeting a year from now. And
see, well, yeah, or 50 years from now, because that's another thing that they're stressing, as they are half a century into this.
Yes, which is a big deal. That's not nothing to have been one of the inventors, one of the pioneers of enterprise resource planning software, and to, yeah, be the biggest tech company in Europe and still really the market leader, despite Oracle's efforts and Microsoft and others. As a sort of a broad statement, we've said it already, it seems like almost all these announcements were like the kinds of nice announcements you might see during the course of a year about a relationship with another product, or two of their own products being put together, or a cool new feature or two or three being added to an existing product, or an announcement about a product like AppGyver, no code, low code, that, as I was reading Jim's coverage of this, was actually acquired by SAP, which they did admit at Sapphire, acquired by SAP in February of 2021, and then kind of relaunched, I think, around TechEd time last year. Which of the ones come to mind? And if none do, for the two of you, that says something. But are there a couple that maybe rose to the surface a bit for you among the product announcements?
I would, just off the top of my head, I'd say the first one that I would think of was the partnership with Apple. With, they had a couple apps that are for kind of warehouse management and logistics apps. And they say that they're just the first two of, you know, a series of apps that they're going to develop for iOS devices for, you know, sort of solving that whole supply chain disruption issues that, you know, they're going to improve warehouse picking and packing on the warehouse management app. And the delivery or the logistics one is, you know, kind of promising paperless delivery. So that was kind of, you know, they've partnered with Apple on iOS, you know, applications before, but I thought that was interesting ways to, you know, to go at a couple of those problems that people really have. So,
yeah.
Suppose just reaching back to Christian Klein keynote and to the event that you guys were at, you know, the whole kind of enhancement to various sustainability mm-hmm. products or services, mm-hmm. SAP product footprint management, the enhancement of that to help customers to reduce their carbon footprints. You know, that's the other kind of big theme, isn't it? Supply chain resilience, like Jim said. And then the other thing is sustainability, which is a multi-dimensional thing, sustainability.
Yeah.
Oh, it really is. Something, Jim, that you had in your main keynote piece was a point made by our friend John Reed at Diginomica, saying mm-hmm. that this year sustainability felt more organic than 2 years ago. And that made sense to me. It does seem to be the case. And maybe it's just because over those 2 years, SAP has added a bunch of features.
Yes, it does. But also, you know, he makes the point too, which I totally agree with, is the world has changed in 2 years, right? I mean, we've got, you know, COVID and the war in Ukraine and, you know, the issues that I think that people might not have been top of mind for them 2 years ago. You know, they were sort of like, a couple of years ago when they were doing the sustainability announcements is when sort of the whole pandemic was just starting and people were kind of concerned about whether their business was going to be running a year from now, rather than sort of this esoteric at the time, maybe sustainability goals. But now, you know, I think people are seeing that, you know, gas supplies can be interrupted and they're maybe they don't want to, you know, rely on such an unreliable source of oil. And I think it just seems more real for a lot of companies now. That, and there's also, there's regulations coming in. There's, you know, the SEC is going to supposedly implement some carbon tracking regulations where you'll have to track the carbon as you would track your financial information. I think that those issues may be becoming a little more solid, a little more real for a lot of people.
And certainly, to be fair to Christian, he really majored on that theme back in 2020 in his first keynote that he gave and had to give virtually. So he's been singing that song for a fairly long time. The other thing that just popped into my head, guys, is if you remember last year, the business network was the big thing. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't aware of any. Was there anything new there? I know that Hitosha Thurman, she kind of referred to that, you know, for talking product. I wasn't aware of it being the same, you know, it didn't have the same kind of salience as it did last year.
No, it did not. I did speak with Mohammed Alam, who was brought over from Microsoft to kind of run the business network. And, you know, he was saying that, you know, it's still sort of finding its own way too. You know, I think they've kind of joined together the Ariba network with, you know, the logistics business network and the asset management network, which is kind of a, you know, an IoT related network. I think they want to have this thing all connected together and working well, but in working smoothly or seamlessly, but I don't think they're quite there yet. And I think they know that. So, but I think you'd say, like, you know, names like Ariba, people will still talk about them, but they want to call it the Business Network for Procurement now or some such name. So I'd have to look back and see what he actually said. So they want to subsume all those sort of network elements under this larger business network umbrella, and then have like each use case kind of use the elements of it that are needed, like the SAP Business Network for supply chain, the SAP Business Network for logistics.
There's such a kind of multi-tentacled beast. So a couple of things that Irfan Khan said in his press session with us yesterday that I thought summed up things quite well in terms of where SAP is. He said, we have to drive a very hard line between the legacy of SAP and customers' perceptions of SAP and where we need to get to. So he kind of acknowledged that. And the sort of the vision of SAP that isn't, you know, just his, but he's just articulating what the senior leadership at SAP think, is that the future of it is cloud-based modular services, right? So it's not the SAP of old. And they are really, I get the impression that they are kind of increasing and intensifying their relationships with the hyperscalers and with the systems integrators, so that it's a different type of world now. So that what they're going to do is they're going to have those cloud-based modular services. And on the data side, that's like HANA Cloud, Data Intelligence Cloud, the Analytics Cloud, and the rest. But they're going to supplement all of that with services from best of breed suppliers and partners and the hyperscalers. I mean, AWS, Microsoft Azure, Google Cloud Platform, they can all do really interesting data and applications things. So that seems to be the way they're seeing SAP evolving.
I got some confirmation from this from really interesting conversations I had that are in a Q&A that we are publishing with Martin Heinig and Yad Oren, who both work in the New Ventures and Technologies wing, which is essentially like a 300-person sort of mid-range R&D wing for SAP that looks at possibilities of products. These aren't products yet, but these are looking at technologies like quantum computing and blockchain. And composable processes are a main function of what they're looking at. And this is something we've talked about a bit before, composable ERP.
Yeah, we have, yeah.
Yeah, so it seems like this somewhat more future-looking 2 to 5 year, maybe at most 10-year kind of research also is right in line with what you were just saying.
If I can, just to kind of finish that thought off on a personal note. So he was, I think he was chief technical officer or chief technology officer at Sybase, if you remember that.
Yeah.
That was an acquisition that SAP made about 10 years ago, which is how come he's part of the company now. And he said it's very different. SAP is a very different company to what it was when he first joined it.
One product announcement that I'd like to briefly highlight is something you both, I think, mentioned in your coverage also, is these AI-based optimizers or
Sort
of automation tools in specific important business processes, lead to cash, design to operate, recruit to retire. So recruit to retire is almost like a catch-all term for all of talent management, and source to pay. And I was fortunate to have a couple of briefings before Sapphire and as Sapphire with Bharat Santu, who's the senior VP in that effort. He very much talked about those announcements at Sapphire, which are they're certainly not automating all of those processes. They have some pieces, some operations and processes within, let's say, lead to cash that they have some AI tools for. But he said that this is going to be their approach as opposed to a platform approach, which I think is what we've seen from Infor. And he would say also from his previous employer, Microsoft, with their Azure AI platform. So the way SAP is doing this strikes me as similar to what we were hearing from Oracle, which over the years has been announcing these sort of smaller workflow and business process helpers and bots and intelligent bots for certain specific processes within like HR and accounts payable.
Yeah,
actually do.
It's so funny you should say that, David, because that, as you were talking there, that did spring to my mind, and I was thinking about, how there used to be Leonardo, and a lot of the enterprise software companies had their kind of fancy name for their AI efforts as an umbrella term. But in the meantime, Oracle had been quietly just kind of coming up with these seemingly quite humdrum machine learning.
Yep. It seems like SAP is following suit. They might not frame it that way. And I would say the one thought I had in an effort that otherwise seems pretty coherent and is probably something to really keep an eye on is that this effort in the press release and in the announcements and in the pitch that Bharat Santu is making to call it 4 processes that they're focusing on, designed to operate, recruit to retire, et cetera, is also maybe a way to kind of bring some rationality and focus to their own efforts, but also to the marketing of those efforts. Because if you've got this giant ecosystem of ERP and partners and all that, third-party products and things like Concur and other services that they have purchased and that are integrated with their ERP, it's going to be kind of a wild west of, okay, we have AI for here, we have this bot over here, we have this thing. There's still a lot to be seen yet, because it's not as if they have really automated the entirety of these 4 major processes. It's just where they are focusing and going to emphasize their AI development efforts. So I'm wondering.
And I think that one thing to know that too, I think that's where they're positioning Signavio, the process mining and analytics process management platform that they're using to figure out where all those processes, how they can be optimized, and how you can maybe use, you know, AI and automation to take away all that sort of redundancy and manual effort and in all those processes.
Maybe we can try take a shot at wrapping up here. I was really wanting to ask you both where you think this leaves SAP. We do this almost every year. We've had another Sapphire. We have an ongoing Sapphire. Where does this leave them in the competitive world and their own evolution?
I think they position themselves pretty well. I mean, I think they're transitioning with RISE with SAP. You know, we've noted that's kind of, it's a whole new model, but I think if they can kind of get it together and explain it better, it should sort of set the foundation for what they're trying to do for the next 10, 50 years.
I think Jim's right about that, and that, you know, that shift to kind of outcomes rather than selling tech approach is clearly the right approach. It's interesting to see the kind of evolution of the company, maybe away from HANA. It was all about HANA a few years ago. I mean, first HANA and then S/4HANA. But this vision more of a more kind of modular approach and partnering with the hyperscalers and, you know, involving that maybe their systems integration partners like Deloitte and so on more. And the other thing is that it's interesting to see how it's now a more stable, new senior management team that's driving that. I think Lucas, he's announced he's leaving, isn't he? At the beginning of next year. Okay. So that, and he's the last of that, if you like, that previous generation of executive leaders, Bill McDermott, Vishal, etc. I'm not going to list them all, Rob Ensland. And now you've got Christian Klein and Julia White, you know, formerly of Microsoft, having almost, I said in my piece, rough parity more or less with Christian Klein, you know, in the keynote, et cetera. It just seems like a fresh team.
Well, I think we both noticed, David, too, in the fireside chat or one of the executive Q&As, that a couple of them kind of made a point of saying that they were 40 or just turning 40-ish. So I think they were kind of, you know, not so subtly kind of pointing out that the executive team is not that old. And, you know, maybe they do have sort of fresh ideas to take it forward in the next few years, right?
It's like a company that sort of, to some degree, is anchored, has a bit of an albatross in its past. Let's face it, there's still quite a few legacy systems out there. And you can say that about a lot of ERP vendors. And yet has been trying mightily, even before Christian Klein became CEO, to kind of get people thinking more towards the future. And it's, I do have the sensation to think about when we talk about where the SAP is in this year of finishing the first few Sapphires of 2022, of a company that is trying to move forward, but has a huge weight that it's, that's to some degree still holds it back. And maybe you could say the same about its customers. There's still a struggle to entice people to adopt these new ways and figure out how to get there.
Yeah, I mean, if you're perceived in a certain way, it's always difficult to budge that perception. And it is, you know, 50 years and so on. Yeah, definitely. What do we think about, I don't want to descend into frivolity, but what do we think about, like, Christian Klein's performance? He seemed a bit more poised, maybe, than a couple of years back.
I think so. That was my impression. I felt, and it's easy for, I hesitate to be any kind of critic, because not only do I not speak a second language, but I haven't been on that kind of stage with so many people watching and so much multimedia and probably a lot of, like, maybe over preparation and probably teleprompters, which probably help, but also are confusing. I definitely feel like, I would say it, he seemed to more eased into the role and more at home and kind of comfortable. And maybe also too, he was in person and he did say
he was in person.
And I think he truly, I don't think that was in jest when he made a comment during his keynote about, like, enjoying being together and finally being able to be together. That was not as big a stage, literally, and not as big an audience in person because of the downsizing of COVID. And so maybe it was a comfortable venue. So
I do wonder if they'll go back to having a global one next year.
My impression is probably not. That's just what I think. I think that maybe they'll start to figure out how to do these, you know, smaller series of events better. And they'll probably have, like, you know, I would assume they'll do the sort of Orlando one as the prime sort of kickoff one to a series of events where they'll make whatever big messages are trying to get across for that particular year. They'll probably do that at an Orlando Sapphire again. But I just think the days of these huge, big attendance events, I don't think any company is going to do them. I really don't.
I suppose the peculiarity, though, Jim, with SAP is that it's basically a German company. I mean, I don't know if Germany is still the major source of revenue or whether it's the United States. In any case, is German business is considerable, and the UK also is a very big business for the company too.
You know, where they're trying to, you know, put themselves out as the company that's like giving you all the tools to track sustainability across your enterprise, why are you going to hold an event
absolutely
flying halfway across the world? We'll give you, you know, the carbon credits or whatever. They said they would do that for flights to Orlando, but that doesn't really send a great message. And I'll just say parenthetically, I did notice, and somebody else had noticed that I talked to, that, you know, they have this big sort of theme of sustainability. But David, I'm sure you remember every single meal that was offered at Sapphire was in an individual plastic container, which, you know, they did have recycling bins that were prominent, and but it did seem to be a little bit, you know, off message that your sustainable message was kind of not filtering down to the food distribution, that's for sure.
It could be that that's where COVID messed that up, because maybe they felt they really, and they did do it in previous years, but there were times in previous years when it was the buffet style and we were all going and standing over those
things
and scooping them out. And so maybe this first post-COVID, not barely post-COVID one, was not going to be the most sustainable because they couldn't reuse and they couldn't have as much communal sharing of food. But
yeah, and I guess now that I think about it, that kind of points out there's trade-offs with almost everything you're doing with sustainability, right? I mean, you know, if you're trying to like keep the crowds down and you want to keep maybe people from gathering because of COVID, maybe that's the solution that you come up with, but maybe it's not the most sustainably friendly thing that you could do.
Yeah.
But maybe they could have, you know, had packaging that was not made out of plastic. I mean, that, you know, that seemed like
right.
I think the food distribution at the Hague event was different from what you guys are talking about there. I agree with Jim, and I'm sure I agree with you too, David, that I mean, really the sustainability messaging would be somewhat problematized if you reverted to flying tens of thousands of Germans over to Orlando every year. Although some of those Germans would probably quite like to have a little bit of Florida sun.
Oh yeah, sure.
It is a popular destination, I've heard.
You have to think about the customer pressures here. And also I go back to that comment that seemingly quite kind of flip comment that one of my contacts made about it was really nice to see some of the big boys on stage. If you don't have the one big event, then maybe customers in Germany or the UK are going to feel shortchanged in some way.
Yeah, it's too regional. It might feel like it's only regional, like the way there were regional conferences in years past that were truly smaller, and the big boys, the big folks or whatever, did not apply to them. So
I think they did have an issue this year with a lot of people from smaller partners, and a lot of customers that are, you know, weren't like on their big accounts, were not included in, you know, sort of the initial guest list, and couldn't, obviously, for obvious reasons, they wanted to hold the numbers down. But I think there was probably some resentment there from a lot of those customers that Sapphire used to be their time to get out and meet their customers and make those deals. And they weren't there by and large. So,
Yeah. Well, it is a new day. So this is probably a good note on which to end it. As always, I appreciate the interesting chat with both of you. Thank you.
Oh, absolute pleasure. Thanks so much.
Okay. Thank you.